Well, hello everybody. Welcome to the first episode of Teal Tinted Glasses version 2.0. I guess to start, I think I just want to say thanks to everybody because it's been a dreadful 10 days. And I think I was able to bounce back so quickly thanks to just the amount, this colossal amount of support I got through, you know, Twitter and, you know, private messages and everything else. So I want to start by thanking you for that. Today it's going to be me, it's going to be Zach. Going forward, I think we're going to, this show is going to be very, very writer's room still. I think there'd be some subtle differences. I think that some people are kind of worried about the grind of a weekly show. So I think basically, Mr. Zach here is obviously always welcome. Kevin's always welcome. Joe is always welcome to drop in. But I think we're going to probably do a little bit of looser foundation of hosts. So it's not always going to be the same hosts. I'm hoping to kind of change it up a little bit here and there as the need necessitates. But obviously, anytime Zach obviously wants to be here, he's more than welcome to. I would rather have the bear here with me. So going forward, I kind of want to reach out to some other people and get some other people on the show too. Change a little bit. Wendell obviously isn't here. And if you were expecting like a big Wendell Ian reunion, I apologize. That was not my intention to make you guys think that that was going to be a thing. Although I did reach out to Wendell to make sure that using the name was cool, and he was very, very receptive to that. So obviously I want to be thankful to him because he didn't have to let me use the name again. But I feel like the reason why I named it Teal Tinted Glasses was once upon a time I did this little podcast called Teal Tinted Glasses with Wendell and Rocket, and I said something and I genuinely meant it at the time, where I said I would do this show for 5 people or I would do it for 1,000. And somewhere along the way, I lost that. And I kind of got, you know, I kind of went down a path that maybe wasn't so good, where I kind of started being more concerned about, you know, how many people were reading and watching instead of who. And that's crappy on my part. So I think it's kind of symbolic to kind of, you know, this, I kind of get to start from scratch again. And I thought, what better name to use than Teal Tinted Glasses. So that all out of the way, we have an awesome show for you that I wrote an hour ago. So first, I guess, Zach, how you doing tonight?
Doing well, Ian. Thanks again for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's get down to business. A lot of head coaches getting fired, few GMs getting moved around. Let's start with Dallas Stars. Lindy Ruff's out. Were you shocked that Lindy Ruff kind of got turfed here?
You know, a little bit. That's a whole tough situation. There's plenty of skill out there. Mm-hmm. But really, the goaltending, what are you supposed to do?
Right. Yeah, that was my fault. Like, I thought, like, Jim Nill really, I mean, I understand it was the last year of his deal, so it's really easy to just let him go and not renew it. He's not technically fired. He's just not getting a new contract. So he was kind of a lame duck coach there anyway. But, I mean, yeah, the way I look at it, I think, like, Jim Nill, man, I mean, some of the decisions that he made really put Lindy Ruff in a bind. Goaltending, defense.
Yeah, and the defense was young. I mean, I really like some of the pieces they have. Issa Lindell, Julius Honka, Stevens Johns, I'm warming to. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got, you know, the pieces there. But when you have that young defense, you're going to make some mistakes. You've got a high-powered offense that's really kind of a run and gun. Dare I say, 80s style of, you know, hey, we're just going to score more goals than you. But Antti Niemi and Kari Laitinen just really couldn't batten down the back end whatsoever.
No,
So
no, I mean, even when they were that, you know, that 100 million point team, like my biggest thoughts on them going into the playoffs that year was like, this is a glass cannon.
Right.
So, but yeah, so I'm not surprised. I think Lindy Ruff will probably get another job. I think if I'm Vegas, that's maybe who I look at. That might be the top of my list.
You know, Vegas has got some interesting coaching options now. You know, you have Daryl Sutter, who somehow kept the LA Kings with all those signings that Dean Lombardi kind of became infamous for, right? Mm-hmm. You know, taking aging superstars on bad contracts and trying this reclamation project, you know, down there in Southern California. It was difficult. And so now you're looking at Daryl Sutter, you're looking at Lindy Ruff, probably Ken Hitchcock, you know, depending on what report you read. He was pushed out, didn't want out, kind of left, you know. I don't know if we'll ever get the actual story there, but you know,
it's like the Todd McClellan thing from a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And you know, there's going to be plenty of coaching pieces. It'll be interesting which of those want to tackle an expansion draft or an expansion team.
Yeah. Yes, I will look a bobblehead before the show is over just for you guys. I'm going to get like some weird disease and blame you guys. I mean, that's kind of what I liken it to with Hitchcock is like a Todd McClellan thing where it's like, we'll never really know. It was like, well, you know, he wanted out, maybe he didn't want out, maybe, you know, like, well, and we'll never know. You know, we'll skip to LA here because I thought that was the most interesting thing so far, because I thought like Sutter, I didn't think Sutter would get fired. I thought Sutter would retire and, you know, and then they would just bring someone new in. I was actually, even though I guess I shouldn't be in hindsight, I was actually kind of surprised Lombardi got the axe.
You know, he spent nearly 20 years there, you know, with the Kings, and just a lot of bad contracts. John Quick, I mean, he's a very solid NHL goaltender. I don't feel he's elite. He's been good in the playoffs, but Peter Budaj posted better numbers, you know, this season. So you can't even really claim that the goaltending, you know, let them down, or, oh, our number one goalie was out down there with LA, right? Because statistically, Budaj gave them every opportunity with the roster in front of them to qualify for the postseason. I look at the contracts that got handed out there, and he gambled heavily on low and, you know, AAV long-term contracts, and they just kind of fizzled out. It was brave, and it worked twice, you know, technically. But I can certainly see where the regime change really had to come down, and I think it's better to just start fresh than it is to piecemeal together another management team. So in my mind, kudos to the Kings for doing the hard thing, you know, just cutting to the bone and starting over. But, you know, they're really behind the eight ball with some of these contracts now.
Yeah. No, I mean, look at, and then you look at the trade deadline, and what did they need? They needed scoring. What did they get? Ben Bishop and a very well-used Jerome Iginla.
Right. You know, and they really need to be getting into some secondary scoring. And I mean, the same critique is true for the Sharks. You know, Yannick Hansen, great, you know, solidified the third line perhaps. You know, he's coming around where it's looking like he's found his niche on this roster. The flip side of that is you're still trying to figure out what's going on the wing with Joe Thornton and Joe Pavelski. You know, there's no P.A. Parento, there's no Patrick Eves, there's no Thomas Vanek. Those are three players that I really liked for the Sharks. So, you know, I mean, no GM bats, you know, 1,000 in any facet. But I think Dean Lombardi, the sins of the past finally caught up with him.
And Columbus was just tired of the one-sided relationship that they had, where Columbus gave and gave and gave, and the Kings never gave anything back.
No, that was just a toxic relationship.
It was pretty bad. So Rob Blake becomes the new GM. Luc Robitaille is now the president of hockey ops. Hasn't anyone learned from this yet? Like I feel like this is, you know, the old star coming in and taking the presidency. I mean, other than Shanahan, has this really worked?
I think Yzerman's done a good job down there with Tampa Bay overall. And so I think they're
trying. Is he the president as well as GM?
That I'm not sure on. But obviously he's pulled whatever strings Yzerman is pulling, you know, whether or not they're hit as in title. He's definitely, I think it's safe to say, has a lot of sway down there in Tampa. But then you look at Colorado, and the Joe Sakic era has been an unmitigated disaster.
Yep.
So.
And then you go north to Vancouver with Trevor Linden.
That's not looking too good. And I think that's one of those situations that the Kings kind of are now a case study in. You know, you hold on too long to these aging stars and not just get that purge, you know, turn over the team to the younger players. And Doug Wilson's done a masterful job with the Sharks. You know, he's kept an aging superstar core, augmented it with some youth, some signings. And I don't think he gets enough credit for just how difficult that is. Because you look at Vancouver, you look at the Kings, it generally doesn't work out all that well.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, Doug Wilson has somehow, kept this team relevant and performing, played for a Stanley Cup last year, you know, backed into the playoffs this year, but, you know, they're in it.
Just, we got a question in the chat. Does Lombardi's firing as GM influence his future managing Team USA internationally? God, I would hope the Olympics and the World Cup would affect his managing Team USA internationally. What do you think? Obviously, you're closer to it than I am.
I've not been a huge fan of the constructs of Team USA of late. I don't know if that hurts his standing with USA Hockey, but the flip side of that is I think that this might be a good opportunity for everyone to just get on a fresh page internationally. As well as with the LA Kings.
Yeah, I absolutely agree there. And also, I believe it was Lady Dragonborn just commenting on the you getting into the roasting with the Oilers fan.
Oh, you know, I don't know if that's really a roasting. You know, it's playoff time. You know, if you're out there on the Twitters and bringing an opinion and one that's relatively close to the team, you know, you got to be prepared for it. So,
yeah,
you know, if people want to pick fights on Twitter, that's fine. You know, it's nothing, honestly, whatever the Oilers fans are doing, it's nothing compared to every draft season. So,
right. You know. Oilers fans have really taken it on the chin for about a decade. I'm fine with them being a little obnoxious. I generally try to avoid, I don't mind good hockey talk. I generally try to avoid chit talking on Twitter, but it is what it is.
Yeah, and so much of that, you know, I don't know. I don't consider myself a fan of any team. I'm a hockey fan. I'm into prospects. I'm into minor hockey. That's what I do. I just happen to be situated in San Jose, where I live an 8-minute walk from SAP Center. So yeah, I'm going to take in a lot of Barracuda games. I'm going to get, and then the Sharks practice facility is a 10-minute drive from me, you know, down Surface Street. So what can I do? These are the teams that are around me. I mean,
right. Yeah.
If the WHL wants to expand down here to San Jose, I'm good with that too. So
I'll take it. I mean, I'm not going to pretend I'm not a Sharks fan. I'm a huge Sharks fan, but I am definitely also a fan of the game. Like, there's no such thing as, you know, hockey that I won't watch, basically. Moving on, we have Willie Desjardins getting fired in Vancouver. I don't think there's much to say here. That the writing, I think, was on the wall since the trade deadline.
Yeah, there was a tweet, and I wish I remember the author. I try to give credit, but, you know, it's been such a busy day in hockey. You know, I'm sure everyone's timelines are just flying by. Yeah. And, you know, you're reading every third one. Somebody had mentioned that he was playing Jason Megna, I believe, is the winger along with the Sedin twins. And that's a pretty bad deployment strategy. So, but it's chicken and the egg, right? You have the roster that they've constructed. They give it to you. And what do you do with it when you're missing huge pieces? There's only so much that you can call up. You know, the Comets are in the playoff chase in the AHL, but there's no game-breaking talent that's available for them to call up. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I just think that they needed to do something different there. I mean, Vancouver's a mess, and there's no quick solution coming to make that team better. But it obviously, you know, it just, Willie Desjardins just wasn't the guy. Last but not least, the Panthers, the most interesting team in the league for me anyway, because I just think that their front office is so weird. So Tom Rowe is no longer the general manager. He's no longer the interim head coach. And now Dale Tallon is back in charge, which Dale Tallon is a saint. The stuff that Dale Tallon has put up with in Florida, like, he's worn a lot of things that he's had no business wearing. And, you know, he's always just been a good company dude. So I'm hoping that, you know, Tom Rowe being the advisor to the general manager isn't him just basically being like, okay, you're the GM, but I'm going to advise and you're just going to listen to everything I say.
Yeah, Florida's a bit of a mess right now, aren't they? You know, with this musical chair. You know, I guess finally they're going to get a new coach, but it's just been this constant shuffling of internal candidates. And that gets to be tough, especially when your GM and your coach have to be on the same page. There has to be some synergy. And I just haven't seen that in Florida. And you look at kind of the roster they're constructed, and I mean, the ageless wonder, Jaromír Jágr, sure. You know, he's at an affordable, you know, actually, you know, for 26 points this year, 4 million's kind of
a lot.
You know, that's a heck of a chunk. You know, Roberto Luongo, solid goaltender, goalies, you know, this day and age, they're playing later in their careers with increased conditioning and kind of awareness of rest and nutrition and all that. But they've got a lot of young pieces that are interesting. And that's another team where you look at some of the pieces that they've got that can get purged, like a Sean Thornton. You know, he's 39.
I believe he's retiring now.
Yeah, and well, you know, that's well.
I don't know who's going to keep the code now, but someone will have to.
But they're another team that has, you know, some really interesting, you know, pieces. I really like Alexander Barkov. You know, he's just now 21. He's already an NHL veteran, you know, just able to buy a beer down there in South Florida. Ekblad is going to be obviously a cornerstone.
As long as he can stop getting honkies, yep.
Yeah. And
I mean, that's a concern at this point, I think, with Ekblad, is the number of concussions he suffered this year alone.
Yeah. And you know, hopefully that, you know, that's just a really, you know, bad string of luck. But Trocheck, you know, is there. They've got pieces, you know.
Oh, yeah. And let's not forget that Florida basically just all got injured at the start of the season.
Right.
Ekblad got hurt in the World Cup. Huberto went down, right? Didn't Barkov go down too?
I believe Barkov lost a good number of games. I think he missed over 20.
Right.
You know, this season, and they're going to bounce back. And there's, I think there's a lot of pieces that a coach is going to look at, taking a look at that roster, that's going to be appealing to a coach.
M. Hackle asking, why does Mr. Yager like Florida so much? No state taxes.
A lot easier to keep the body running when it doesn't dip below freezing as well.
That's also true. I think it's going to be interesting to see what he does in the offseason. Because I think, I love Yager. The fact that he can still play. But yeah, he's getting into Chelios territory for me. If I'm the Panthers, I think it's time to walk away from Yager. And I know that some people will think that's completely blasphemy, but I really firmly believe that, something that really, everyone was afraid to say this year was yes, there was people injured, but Yager wasn't really doing much either. And it seems like that's blasphemous to say because it's Yager, but sometimes you just got to let go. And, I don't have to be liked for this comment, but I really think that Yager needs to let go. Sorry. No. That's what it is.
So actually, I was looking at Jonathan Huberow, who had 26 points. Yager actually had 46.
Oh, okay. Well, he's off the hook then.
And he played in all 82 games. His fitness regimen is unparalleled.
Yeah.
Everyone that's got Twitter has seen, 3 a.m. tweets of him in the gym. But there does come the point where does he really want to keep this up? And all signs seem to point to yes. And, I think either way, $4 million for a player that, if he ever really has to go under the knife, that might be it. Because at that age, your body just does not respond like you're 24.
Right.
He's going to be turning 45. So it really comes down to, can he dodge a major injury?
Oh, man. And then, of course, people saying Vegas, Vegas would take him. They probably would. I don't think Yager needs to be anywhere near Vegas, to be honest. But there's obviously the rumors of he went back to the KHL and then came back to the NHL because of gambling debt. So I don't know if Vegas is, I can't confirm that. That's just me spitting what I've heard, but maybe Vegas might not be the greatest life for Yager. Here's the thing with Yager for me. And is it hurting the Panthers in the long run? I know it's good because you have a young team there, but isn't it also kind of, you want to shelter the young guys and let them kind of find their way, but isn't he also he's Yager, I put him in the same breath with a Gretzky or a Lemieux or, can anyone ever truly step in and be the guy with Yager there? Is he holding people, is he kind of holding people back from being the guy finally?
I don't think so. I think he understands his role. And as a GM with a lot of these young pros, I think that the example that Yager sets with the work ethic, the preparation, the fitness, I think that's worth, whatever concessions, for lack of a better term, you've got to make to have one of, the NA really of hockey's great stars, not even the NHL. Yeah. Hockey is a sport.
One of the greatest players to ever lace up the skates. Top.
Yeah.
God, maybe even top five.
Yeah. I was going to say top 10 unequivocally.
Top 10 for sure. Maybe even top five. I don't know. I'd have to think about that. But top 10, absolutely, without a doubt, top 10.
Right.
Players to ever lace up the skates, period. Forget that I've watched, period.
Yeah. So I think that's worth something. And
and
I think that Vegas could be interesting, kind of going back to it, no state tax in Nevada either.
That's true.
Plenty of sunshine. They're going to be starved for forward depth. The team that I am kind of constructing for Vegas, I think they're going to have good goaltending. I think they're going to have good defenders. Forwards will be a barren desert, much like the area they're playing in. So if Yager's interested in coming, he might have to be a first liner just because there's not a lot available in the expansion draft that's going to fill those top pieces.
All right. So apparently there's playoffs starting this week. I don't know. People seem to
really
about it. Yeah, I wasn't told. I mean, the NHL wasn't told either, clearly, because they, you know, they didn't have any schedules ready to go. So apparently no one told anybody that these playoffs were a thing. I don't want to go super in depth into any of the series. I just want to kind of go through and see what's interesting, see what's not, and just, you know, if you have a team you think is going to walk away, let's hear that too. So we'll start out in the East with the Montreal Canadiens versus the New York Rangers. I honestly don't know what to pick in this one. Like, I think the Canadiens probably can win here, but New York is a much better team than where they seeded.
Agreed, but at the same time, the Canadiens have Carey Price.
That's true.
And
that Carey can never Price be discounted.
Can never be discounted. And at the same time, I think he's been better than Henrik Lundqvist this year, who has had a down year by the King standards. So over at the Hockey Writers, they asked for our predictions. I took the Habs over the Rangers in seven. I think that both these teams are really good. I think it'll come down to Carey Price's goaltending. And I think the Habs have the ability to contain the Rangers, and Carey Price being the edge.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I go. It's hard to bet against Carey Price in a playoff series. And I know Carey Price has had a real – I mean, even, you know, you want to talk about the Henrik Lundqvist having a down year. Carey Price's year was a roller coaster.
Right, but if you're looking at one of them to put it together.
Right. No, yeah. Oh, Price, absolutely. I you know what? I like the Habs in six in this one. I think that they should win. I think that the Rangers are a better team than their seeding is, obviously, but I still don't think that's enough to get past Montreal. So I think that, yeah, I think we're in agreement there. Next series, the Ottawa Senators versus the Boston Bruins. Whew, I like Boston here. I think that the Bruins are, you know, again, I think the Bruins, the way that they kind of finished the season, it's hard not to like them. And I just, man, the Senators, we don't know what's going on there at Carlson, and I don't understand why the Senators are as good as they are. I just can't figure it out.
They've been punching well above their weight class all year. I take Bruins as well.
Yeah. Washington Capitals versus the Toronto Maple Leafs. Where are you at on this one?
I think it's going to be the Capitals over the Leafs. Despite the heroics of the teenage sensations over there, I just feel like Braden Holtby is a far superior goaltender to Frederik Andersen. You look at the pieces and the firepower that, and really the stellar depth that Washington has. You know, they're getting scoring from all throughout that lineup, and that's what matters in the postseason. That's great that you've got Mitch Marner and Auston Matthews in this, you know, loaded top line. What do you have backing that up further down the roster? And I think the games are going to be close. But I think the Capitals should handle the Leafs relatively quickly. I don't think it'll be a sweep, but I think it could be 5 or 6.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I don't think I know a lot of people are just thinking that the Capitals are going to steamroll over the Leafs. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to be a steamroll. I think it's going to be, you know, but you got a lot of kids there that are getting their feet wet in the NHL playoffs for the first time. And the Capitals are a better team. I love watching the Leafs play. They're an exciting team to watch. I wish that they would have drawn Ottawa. I think they could have beaten Ottawa, but beating the Capitals is a real tough task, and I don't like their chances. I'm with you. This is probably a 6-game series.
Yeah, at best.
The Pittsburgh Penguins versus the Columbus Blue Jackets is super interesting to me. This is a series that my heart says Columbus, but my brain says Pittsburgh, because Columbus is just one of these teams, kind of like Washington going down the road, where it's just like, this team has to show me something. Like, I can't, you know, until I see it, I can't believe it. I think the Penguins, I don't like the Penguins' chances going deep without Chris Letang, but I think they can get past the Blue Jackets.
Yeah, I think the Penguins ultimately win out. I think this series is going to be close. I think this one can go the distance.
Yeah.
The Blue Jackets have, I think, the pieces to match up well with the Penguins, but I think kind of that experience and moxie that the Penguins have, as well as having two true number one goaltenders, they've just got a lot of depth, even without, you know, Chris Letang. Last season in the postseason, their defenders were just six guys. Yeah. You know, and when you've got the possession players that they've got, I think that masks quite a bit. So I think Penguins over the Blue Jackets, but I think that goes seven.
Yeah, it's a long series. I mean, I hope that the Blue Jackets pull it out, but I can't. If you said put down the money, I can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, Columbus, it would be great to kind of reward that fan base because it is a great fan base.
Yeah.
You know, so if the Blue Jackets, you know, squeaked it out, I'm certainly not going to be sad.
No.
You know, it's,
no, I'll be ecstatic for them.
Right. And I think that'll go a long way to getting some new, fresh storylines into the NHL. So, you know, whoever wins that series, it's gonna be good.
Either I mean, Crosby's fans still have in suffered it. More than Columbus fans, really, like, of late?
I would put the NHL Jets there.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Like, the Jets, I'll give you, going back to Atlanta for sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, really, like, between those two, man, like, they own pain.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe Arizona. You know, Arizona's kind of been self.
Arizona, at least, you know, they've won some playoff rounds.
Right.
Whereas Columbus has never won a playoff round. The Jets 2.0 never won a playoff round.
They've never won a playoff game.
Truth. Which against that Ducks series, man, I felt so bad for them because they led like the majority of the game, every game. And then right before it ended, the Ducks just flipped the switch and won, and it was brutal.
Yeah, it was almost like the Ducks were toying with them.
It was, yeah. It was like it was bad. So I think, yeah, I for Columbus fans, I just want it for them because I feel like, man, that is a fan. But you want to talk about suffering fan bases? That is a fan base that hasn't had very much to cheer about basically ever. Going over to the West, we have the Chicago Blackhawks versus the Nashville Predators. I hate myself for saying this. I think Chicago's going all the way. And I hate myself for it, but
I Blackhawks over Preds in five. That's gonna be a quick series.
Yeah, I want to like this Nashville team, but I think you get a little more experience for Saros and out from under Pekka-Rinne. And then, you know, like the defense is there. This on paper should be the best defense core in the league. I don't know. I mean, obviously you still need someone to put the puck in the net a little bit more for them, but yeah, I don't see how the Predators have a chance against the Blackhawks.
Yeah. That's not gonna, I don't see that as being much of a series. If there's one to kind of fast forward through, that'd be my pick.
Yeah, it doesn't even really intrigue me at all. Like, at an intrigue level, I think that's the series, like, I might watch paint dry first. Minnesota Wild taking on the St. Louis Blues. The Blues, I mean, you know what? I give the Blues a lot of credit for getting in. I thought for sure when they dealt Shattenkirk that, like, that was it, right? They were selling. They were done. And here they are playing the Minnesota Wild. I don't like the Wild deep, but I think that they should be able to take care of business against St. Louis. I think it'll probably be a six-game series, but I think that the Wild should take care of business here. I don't know how deep they go, but they should beat the Blues.
Yeah, I have the Wild over the Blues in six. I just like what the Wild are doing. Yes, they cooled off immensely, but Devan Dubnyk is an excellent goaltender. I like the pieces that they've got. They're going to trot out Suter for, you know, 35, 40 minutes a night.
Right.
You know, and they'll figure out his rest schedule, you know, once the playoffs are over. I don't like the Wild to emerge out of the West, but I think they handled the Blues.
Yeah, like I don't think the Blues have enough. And I am not a believer in what's his name? Jake Allen.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not a believer at all. I would take Dubnyk over Jake Allen every day and twice on Sunday. Next up, we have the we were stolen, man. We were robbed of a Battle of California and Battle of Alberta, and that kind of makes me sad a little bit. Anaheim Ducks, Calgary Flames. This is Anaheim in a walk.
See, I like the Flames here. I really do. I think that they've got some really good defensive depth. The Ducks are dinged up on the back line. I'm a huge fan of Matthew Tkachuk. I don't think he got nearly the play last year in the draft. My editor over at the Hockey Prophets, Brian Fogarty, did a really great piece on breaking down every single point of Matthew Tkachuk's season with the London Knights. And it pointed to him being seriously in consideration in the top three. And I think that's been borne out. I like the Flames. They're going to need to get Bennett, Monahan, Goudreau. You know, they're going to have to be firing on all cylinders offensively. But I think overall, I think the Flames can handle this in seven.
I like the Ducks here. I think it's just, you know, I worry about the Flames. Like, I don't think anyone wants to play the Ducks, just the heavy style the Ducks play. And I just worry about, I mean, because, you know, Calgary, a lot of their best players aren't their biggest players. And I really worry about that battle of attrition where they're just going to get beat down and beat down and beat down for, you know, six, 7-game series. So I think I like the Ducks here. I hate that I like the Ducks here, but I feel like, you know, with the Flames won, ecstatic. But I just feel that the Ducks are going round two for sure.
All right.
And last but not least, we have the San Jose Sharks versus the Edmonton Oilers. Go ahead.
Oh gosh, where do you start? I'm hoping to have my preview and my tale of the tape ready tomorrow over at the Hockey Writers. It's going to be, I think either way, this is going to be a close series. I don't think that the Oilers have the depth necessary to play in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and that was the tweet that kind of set off the Oilers fans. Yeah, that everyone went bear hunting and got their tags from DFG and went hunting in California. But, yep. You know, hey, that's fine. The issues that they've got there, I don't like their blue line whatsoever, really any piece of it. I'm not a Darryl Nurse fan. Larson is solid but not spectacular. But I should also probably qualify this. I'm also assuming that Thornton and Couture play. Right. Because as soon as you take that out, this whole series just shifts on its head.
Absolutely.
The Sharks last year, their secondary scoring got it done. It's not the secondary scoring you need in the regular season.
Right.
You know, these are going to be low scoring, every inch of the ice contested, kind of bang, crash, muck, goal kind of plays. And I don't think that fits in well with the Oilers' overall style. The Sharks are going to need Vlasic and Braun to find last year's form. Because if they don't, it's going to be ugly, and McDavid has that ability to take over games. He's got the skill. He's a generational talent that this league has not seen since Sidney Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got all the pieces. I think the goaltending's probably a push.
Yeah.
You know, I think both these two netminders have been run into the ground. I think they're both just trying to get some rest, get enough in the tank and get ready for the proverbial battles ahead. Overall, I think, again, with Thornton and Couture playing and playing significant roles, I like the Sharks' defensive depth. Goaltending's a push. I think it's going to be Sharks and Oilers over the Oilers in seven.
I hate myself for this because I am a Shark fan, but I just, man, I want to believe so badly that this team is going to be okay. But I can't do it. They backed into the playoffs. Mark Edward, you know, like you said, you know, Vlasic has to be Vlasic. Vlasic hasn't looked like Vlasic to me in 2 months. And to have, you know, and that's the key to the series. I completely agree. If Vlasic can shut down McDavid and, you know, and Draisaitl, because I think Draisaitl's another, you know, that line is just sick. And I don't think their second line's terrible either. But if Vlasic can't be Vlasic, I mean, this, it's done. It's over. The Sharks, you know, the injuries to Thornton and Couture are bad, but they didn't really play that good when they, before they went down either. And that's hard for me to, you know, it's hard for me to ignore that thing. And you look at Couture, I you know, look at Couture's going to be nowhere near 100% whether he skates or not. Nowhere near. Like, I give him like 70% tops. And Joe Thornton, I think, is probably closer. You know, I think Joe Thornton really dodged a bullet there. But I just, man, I want so badly, and I hope the Sharks win, obviously. But I'm setting myself up for first-round disappointment. I have the Oilers in six.
See, I think that with the Couture injury, and yeah, I don't think Couture or Thornton are going to be 100%. Don't get me wrong. But
no, Draisaitl's good. Sorry, Lady Dragonborn. Draisaitl's awesome. I Draisaitl does not need anyone to make him good. Draisaitl is good.
Leon's just a good hockey player. He plays with the best hockey player, but he is an excellent hockey player himself.
Yeah. No, I watched him. He was the Kelowna Rockets when he was there.
Yeah. Overall, the issue with the Oilers, and to be fair, I don't like either the Sharks or the Oilers. Whoever comes out of this series is second round fodder.
Yeah.
That's really where I come down at the end of all of this. The issue is that once you get past McDavid, the dynamic offense dries up. And what the Sharks were able to do with last year's playoffs is use defensive depth to make the top line disappear.
Right.
And the top lines generally cancel themselves out in the postseason. It comes down to secondary scoring, unsung heroes, guys you've never heard of stepping up, you know, when the spotlight is brightest. I don't like Edmonton's chances when it comes to that. I think the Sharks have enough experience and depth where it can mitigate it in a long and brutal series.
Yeah.
But whoever comes out of this, that's where it ends. Whichever team base or whichever fan base gets to enjoy a playoff, you know, series round win, enjoy it, because that's all you're getting.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because, like, I know everybody out there hates when McDavid comes up. He's such an X factor, and I until I see him get shut down, I can't assume that's going to be the case, and that's where I have a really, really hard time picking the Sharks.
And they're not going to shut down Connor McDavid.
No.
You know, that's simply not going to happen. Can the Sharks play in a structure and a team defense with two excellent defensive defensemen and Mark Edward Vlasic and Justin Braun mitigating 60-70% of his damage? That's going to be the key. And if that doesn't happen, it could easily swing the other way
very quickly, unfortunately. And that's my thing. It's just like, I want to believe, but man, I just haven't seen enough out of Vlasic this year to be very comfortable being like, no, we have Vlasic, we're good. We have Vlasic, it's fine. Just worry about Nuge and Eberle.
Yeah, except I'm not worried about Nugent and Eberle.
No. But I mean, that would be, but if Vlasic was the Vlasic that he normally is, I would be far more confident, because I'd be like, yes, Vlasic is going to mitigate most of McDavid. And then that's what you're down to. You're down to Nuge. You're down to Eberle. The Sharks can shut that down.
Yeah. Yeah. The other part that I think that people forget is that, you know, the regular season and the postseason really are two different sports.
No, you I know, agree.
The rule book for the postseason can be written on a cocktail napkin with a crayon. So it's like, were you killed? Yes or no? Okay, no penalty. Yes? Yeah. Okay, it's a minor. You know? So
I got a great question for you when you're done here.
So, you know, that's the part where I think kind of that that old Asian treachery that the Sharks have in spades over, you know, over the Oilers is going to be kind of the pivotal part that they're going to key in on. You know, and Milan Lucic, you know, he adds a bit of that, but, you know, he's just as prone to take himself out of a game too.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Lucic plays on that line where, you know, if you can get him going, you could, yeah. I mean, you could make him completely useless. We all watched that happen when, you know, he got hit by Couture and decided that no one hits Lucic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I completely agree. if Haley plays in the games and the Sharks don't make it out of the first round, is it Haley's fault?
No. No. That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
Oh man, that's fantastic. Sorry, I had to ask that. It's gonna be what it is. The guys that are gonna play are the guys that are gonna play. I can't stop here.
If this comes down to Michael Haley's 6.2 minutes, four out of seven games he plays, both these teams have way bigger problems. If Michael Haley is the X factor that we're talking about when we're just deconstructing this playoff series, it has been such a massive failure by every other skater, maybe in the NHL. I'll just start blaming random, you know, Blackhawks for what's going on. I don't know.
I agree.
You know,
look, is Michael Haley my ideal playoff player? No, this is a guy that you play in the regular season and you put him in a nice suit up top during the playoffs, and that's fine. Is that going to happen? Probably not.
See,
I've accepted this.
Actually, so I just got the chat window up, and I think Nick has an excellent point. I was just going to say this. Haley can play hockey, and I think that's the part people forget. You have an absolute loose cannon in Lucic. And yep. And somebody like Haley, he plays a pretty good and antagonistic role. You know, I think that his ability to draw penalties, yes, he takes some silly ones. I'm not defending his penalty selection. But he also knows that what his job is, and this has been my thing with Haley, he knows his role, he does it well, and he does it better than a lot of players on a lot of rosters. Yep. And so you put Haley in that lineup, and he's able to get into Lucic's head, get him on tilt, get him, you know, overthinking this and thinking that it's, you know, caveman style club everyone. That's where Michael Haley can influence this type of series when the teams are going to be playing, you know, seven games in, 16 nights or whatever it is.
I would like Michael Haley to, or not Michael Haley. I want Milan Lucic to meet Diet Lucic.
Meet who?
Diet Lucic, Timo Meier.
Oh. Jeez.
Only he doesn't play that way when he's in the NHL, unfortunately. He's only Diet Lucic in the AHL.
Yeah, you know.
I don't understand it.
Well, he's 20 years old. These players are still discovering who they are.
Yeah.
You know, at this, you know, at the NHL level, you know, but it's going to come down to some of the kids. You look at who the Sharks have on the roster with, you know, Timo Meier, Marcus Sorensen, Kevin LeBanc, I could very easily see this series coming down to the kids as, you know, contributing big roles in that secondary scoring that every team needs.
Do you with Thornton and Couture coming back into the lineup, who do you think's going down to the Barracuda?
That's a great question. You know, I hate to say it. I don't know if you just keep everyone up. Oh. You know, it, because you might, I mean, and Sommer has said that, you know, their job is to augment and reinforce and assist the parent club. So if the Barracuda get, you know, decimated on their roster like they did out in Stockton on Saturday, so be it. You
yeah,
know, that's the role. That's what they do. If I got to set the Sharks roster, I'd probably send Timo back, and I would put him into the AHL playoffs and really flat out say, like, I expect a lot out of you.
Right.
You know, this summer when we talk, I want to hear all about the four rounds you played in the AHL playoffs.
Yeah.
I think Danny O'Regan, you know, is likely to stick with the Barracuda. I think LeBanc sticks there. And I think Sorensen's, you know, he's got a good amount of skill and he's got game-breaking speed.
Yeah.
You know, he is, I think, pretty much easily the fastest San Jose show. Maybe Bodker. Yeah, that'd be an interesting foot race. But that's speed that you could insert into a lineup that plays a really solid role and produces a good amount of shots as well. So, you know, I'd like to see, every Barracuda fan would love to see all the kids returned and watch this. For sure.
And just watch them steamroll things.
Yeah, exactly. See the world's first four consecutive, you know, sweeps. But we'll see. I think that, you know, they've got the pieces down there. They're going to be competitive, but Timo would be the guy I send down.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I think LeBanc I keep up no matter what at this point. I think that he's shown enough since coming back up that, you know, and I was very on the record being worried about where he was at mentally. You know, hitting that mental wall, but he's looked so great since being back up. And so I really like that. Sorensen, I kind of agree. And to me, it's hard. It's between, you know, Sorensen and Timo. I've been kind of, for the most part, I mean, not always. I think that's been the case with Timo, the problem with Timo all year, but there's been some games I really like Timo in this most recent call up. And then there's some games not so much.
Right, and consistency is kind of the last piece to come for a lot of young players.
Right.
And you don't find that in the Stanley Cup playoffs with a team with their last glimpse of sunlight for a playoff run.
Let's see, just in the chat here. Sorry, guys, I know there's only two of us, so chat's a little harder to keep track of. Thoughts on Donskoy? Donskoy... It's kind of heartbreaking. I really like Jonas Donskoy. I've made no secret about my love of Jonas Donskoy, but I don't know what's going on with him. They need more from him, obviously. I don't think it's just a lack of offense that's bothering me with Donskoy's game right now. That engine isn't running the way it was last year, in my opinion.
He's been pretty dinged up throughout the year, you know. And
that's definitely something to keep into consideration.
Yeah, and I think that this is speculation. I've got no inside knowledge on this, but he's one of those players that you watch him and he doesn't look like him. And, and the skating, the stick handling, there's a lot going on physically there. So I would not be surprised one bit, that he goes under the knife, when this all wraps up.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that wouldn't shock me at all. Look, guys, I mean, we all saw what Jonas Donskoy was last year. I mean, he was basically, you know, he was the engine that just didn't stop.
Right.
He was the, you know, he was the in my opinion, the hardest working guy on the team last year, and he hasn't been that. And I agree with Zach. I mean, he doesn't look like himself. And I think that it's easy to be upset because, let's be honest, Sharks secondary scoring this year was kind of atrocious. The Sharks power play this year was kind of atrocious. I mean, there's a lot to be frustrated with, but I don't think that Jonas Donskoy just forgot how to play hockey suddenly.
Right. And that's the point. And that gets kind of back to my critique of some of the teams that we've been talking about as a secondary scoring. You know, Donskoy was a huge piece of that. Logan Couture, second line center, you know, he was shutting down, you know, other teams, you know, top six lines while chipping in, you know, not chipping in, while, you know, leading the NHL with 30 points.
Right.
You know, that's what you need. Joe Thornton was not the reason, you know, the Sharks, you know, statistically, you know, with the production, he draws a lot of attention. He draws the tough matchups, and that's what it does. That's what Joe Thornton and that top line does in the postseason. They get the big minutes. They get the minute munchers out of the way. That way the secondary guys have a little bit easier sledding, but they still have to step up and dominate there.
Did Cooch lose all his teeth so literally no other teams would want to block Brent Burns' shot? I don't think anyone wants – it's one of those things where you do it because you have to do it. I don't think anyone's been like – no one's happy to have to block a Brent Burns shot. No one's happy about it.
Yeah, that's not something that's on anyone's Christmas list.
No. Oh, man. Yeah, poor Logan. I feel bad for him, and I don't see how he's going to – you know, that kind of facial – destruction is going to be really difficult to play through, and I don't envy that dude one bit.
I don't know. This is the playoffs, and this is, you know, hockey players, rightfully so, have the reputation of some as the toughest, you know, human beings on earth, and their ability to suffer is phenomenal.
I don't envy his suffering, though.
No, I don't either. But there's also a lot to be said for better living through chemistry. And they're going to, you know, shoot up, ice down, numb, whatever they've got to do to play. And I think that this team realizes that this is the last kick at the can, last serious kick.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like their chances moving forward, but I think they get that they need to, wherever that switch is, it's got to be found, because this is the last time they're going to be in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, we can get to like that. We can absolutely get to. I think we're gonna have all summer to talk about that. I don't want to get too.
Don't spoil July for us.
Yeah, I'm not gonna spoil July. Look, I want to be like, I can talk hockey. I don't care what time of year it is, man. It can be, you know, 40 degrees on a beach, 40 Celsius on a beach, and I would still, you know, talk hockey all day if someone will listen to me. Let's get into the Barracuda quick. They had two games this weekend. I want to say they lost the first one because they were completely dismantled. Not dismantled, but completely underhanded. And then they won. Am I correct in this? This weekend was such a blur.
So they played three games last week. They had the 5-1 win against the Ontario Reign, and really a textbook Barracuda hockey win.
Right.
And I think their most decimated roster of the season against Stockton, that's playing very well. The Heat they've overtaken the Bakersfield Condors. Their goaltending is rounding into shape. Mark Jankowski is certainly firing on all cylinders. Lyndon Vay's there. Hunter Shinkaruk's getting hot. Klimchuk's had a great season all year. So the Heat came out and really handled business. And then the Barracuda were able to respond in one of the stranger games of the season from an observational standpoint with the victory on Sunday.
Yeah. I watched the Saturday game. Like I said, the last 10 days have been such a blur. Like, I don't really remember much of anything. What did you think? I know we had some new appearances. Who was it Saunders in net on Saturday night?
Yeah, Saunders was in net, and the rebound control that we saw in his first go around really came back to bite him with the absence of, you know, Tim Heat on defense, which really helped set the rest of that blue line.
Yeah.
You know, it's you get players that are not as familiar, and you're forcing, say, a Mirko Mueller and Julius Bergman to do more lifting than I think they're ready for.
Fair enough.
And that might that's where a Tim Hee just settles that lineup down. And then you take out Goudreau with his, yep, 20 plus goals. You take out Daniel Regan, who's been an offensive catalyst. Myers was gone. Sorensen's been up. LeBanc's been up. It was outside of Chartier's line, which has probably been the Barracuda's best line for 6 weeks.
Oh,
that line's been phenomenal.
That's Chartier, Robinson,
and Haluka.
And Haluka, right? Okay.
Yeah, and they were huge in Ontario. They were solid in the first game in Stockton, and I think they were very solid, in Sunday's win.
So Sunday's game I didn't see. The stream wasn't working to start, and I just kind of said, F it, I'm going to watch a movie with the missus. So I haven't been able to go back and catch the replay. How was Noah Rod?
So Noah, he joined the team late last week, got a practice or two in, and really it was a less than ideal game to get your NHL break in. But it was, he hasn't played hockey in 3 weeks.
Right.
Right. He's coming to a new culture, a new ice surface. He's coming to a new team with a new system. He's behind the eight ball, in every facet of the game. He was used sparingly. I think that's fair to say. And it was kind of an introductory game, and I talked to him after the game, and he flat out said it was wild, that there's really no fighting in Switzerland and they just play hockey. And so to kind of get thrown into this, it was strange. And I also spoke with Colby McCauley, who they signed from the Prince George Cougars after their disappointing WHL playoff exit.
Yes.
They actually both came out at the same time. So I was talking to both of them, and both of them mentioned that it's their job to fit in, to do what they can, right, not overstep their bounds. This is a team that's been battling all year. It's their job to assimilate and help them where they can. And I think that's a good, a good thing for obviously, McCauley on the ATO, but Noah Rode also, don't be trying to do too much. Do what you can, contribute where you can, and hopefully chip in, be part of that secondary scoring.
Yeah, that's fair. The question in the chat, where's Armalis? Armalis is still around. He backed up Grosnick on Sunday.
Right.
I think Armalis' days are probably numbered in San Jose.
I think San Jose is going to see two new goaltenders at the AHL level next year.
Yeah.
I think Troy Grosnick, who really was a no-brainer vote for the AHL Goaltender of the Year.
Yeah. 10 shutouts and stupid numbers. And...
Yeah. 30 wins, 1.98 goals against, .930 save percentage, 10 shutouts, like you mentioned. He's been the backbone for the Barracuda, who are the first-place team in the AHL. That might have – if I was able to vote for San Jose players, which in the AHL end of year voting, you can't vote for teams in your city. So whatever team you cover, you can't vote for those players.
That's fair. That's the way NHL should be.
But I mean, I watch a ton of hockey.
I know.
I'm watching Troy Grosnick, and you look at the rest of the, Casey has had a nice, David Rittich had a nice year, but really it's like, it's Troy Grosnick.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to put three names down, but what's the point?
Yeah. No, I agree.
Save the ink. and it's just been...
Is that going to be the hard voting this year? Like, you can put three names down, but...
Yeah. What's the...
Crazy. Cheryl asking, what'd you think of DeSimone as this weekend came on and went?
D DeSimone, you know, I think settled down, and you're seeing the flashes of what he offers. And I think a really intriguing pairing is DeSimone and Jacob Middleton. I've been, you know, and I tweeted this out, I forget which game, but if I'm a San Jose defensive prospect, I'm looking over my shoulder for Jacob Middleton. He's been a great pickup. He's really matured. I spoke to him after the Stockton game as well, and he kind of encapsulated my thoughts on defenders where, you know, he said that he's got to produce more offense, and that's what the team is asking for him too. His defense is solid. They want him to carry the puck more, do more with it. He's got a good first pass. He's got size. He's got snarl. And there's no such thing as a defensive defenseman anymore.
Right.
You know, and I think as a 20-year-old defender in your first year as a pro, flat out saying like, hey, I've got to adjust to the times. I've got to get comfortable with the puck on my stick. He just, you look at his game, it's solid, you know, in both zones. He activated twice to get some goals going for the Barracuda this weekend. And I mean, he's just been a really stellar UFA.
Yeah. No, I agree. There's a couple of guys that I want to kind of touch on before we wrap it up. Cause I know we said like when we were originally planning to do a show Sunday that we're like, okay, we gotta ease off the prospects a little bit, you know, carried away on the prospects, but I have to ask some questions here. Dylan Gambrell wins the Frozen Four. Do you see any chance that he leaves college this year?
Part of me says, well, what else do you have to prove?
Yeah.
You've won a national championship. You've been at school for a couple of years. You're a second round NHL draft pick on a team that, really, no matter what, whatever Thornton, whatever Marleau, whatever happens, the Sharks are going to be a contending team. So it's not like you're going to go to, you know, some, you know, you're not going to go to Vancouver.
Right.
You know, and try to earn jobs. But, you know, maybe for these young guys, and we saw it with the Dylan Sandoe situation, mm-hmm. that they're looking at the roster. They're looking at guys like O'Regan, Haluka, Chartier, Meyer, LeBanc, Sorensen, you know, if he's re-signed, there's a lot of bodies to jump over.
No, there is. I just figure with, you know, you have so many guys getting called up and stuff, like it wouldn't, I don't know. I feel like there's, you know, a guy like Gambrell could find his way into a decent spot on the Barracuda quickly, I think.
Like to the Barracuda? Push.
Yeah.
I think so.
I mean, I don't think he would come over and I'm not saying Gambrell's a guy that's going to go up and join the Sharks right now, but I think that he could find a nice cozy place with some of these guys getting called up on the Barracuda.
Yeah.
And then, you know, whatever it is next year, it is next year.
I mean, there's going to be a lot of estate planning, you know, going on. There's a number of UFAs and RFAs, you know, Vegas is coming in. That's going to open up a lot of jobs. So, I think that's what the Sharks are doing, is bringing in so many of these players that aren't their draft picks.
Yeah.
You know, they brought in DeSimone, who I think was a solid signing out of Union. I've liked what I've seen out of him in the early returns. Tim Clifton is a hardworking centerman. I don't think I've seen him take a stride off yet.
Right.
I mean, every single time he's out there, he's got his nose in it. You know, just huge effort level. His compete level is excellent. I don't think Clark Saunders is the answer in net. You know, I think Armalis probably moves on. I think Grossnick moves on. He's a UFA. And I think there's enough NHL jobs where teams aren't happy with their backups. And Vegas coming in, there can be some serious interest after all the hardware Grossnick's going to collect here. You know, he's picked a great year to have a breakout, you know, stellar campaign. And getting back to Cheryl's, I think it was Cheryl's question, she asked about Parker Gahagan, who I spoke with down in one of the tunnels, and still no word there. But, you know, bringing in a Gahagan with Jamie Murray and Clark Saunders,
if so many goals they decide right now.
To, you know, but you're going to need two at least. right? And if Jamie Murray's in the mix, maybe one down in Allen. You know, Mike Robinson, it sounds like he's finally going to start his career in New Hampshire. But, you know, he's a project to put it.
Did he now correct me if I'm wrong. So Robinson, he was the one that went back to the NA.
Yeah.
HL? Right.
Yeah. Okay. He got lit up in the USHL. Yeah. And so, you know, it's even a solid, let's not even call it a top goalie prospect. Let's just say a standard goaltending prospect. You should be able to lock down a job in the UCHL, yep. USHL, excuse me.
Yeah. USHL. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I like what I hear about the Skahagen fellow. So hopefully that gets done. The other player that I wanted that I have to ask about, because I can't wrap my mind around it, is Balcers. This is a guy that, yes, you don't have to sign, and I get that. But again, this is another, you know, you have people getting called up and stuff, and why would you not bring Balcers into the fold? It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, it seems like the plan is to send him back to Europe, and I think that's dumb, because why would you not want him over here working on the game in North America? Like, does it make any sense to you?
I think it's a little strange that we haven't heard any signings whatsoever. You know, you look at Balcers, you mm-hmm. look at Noah Gregor, even Manuel Werderer. You know, he's going to age out of the CHL, so that's kind of
he's still playing though, right?
He is. He, you know, he's playing with the Huskies, but you're going to have jobs open at the AHL level next year. Ryan Carpenter's a UFA. Daniel Regan's probably up with the Sharks. You have to think Timo Meier with another summer. You know, is maybe that bounce back and forth? You know, 40 in each. You know, it, with each club, you know, 35, 35, whatever. And it's just been kind of a head scratcher that, especially with Balcers.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Like, I understand. Like, here's the situation. So, just for anyone who doesn't understand, now, generally speaking, when you draft a player in North America, you have until they're 22 years to sign them to a contract. Now, Balcers being drafted out of Europe actually extends that window to 4 years. So, even though he's here now, he was still drafted out of Europe, which means that the Sharks do have 4 years to sign him. They are, well, the next, I guess. What, two more years now they have to sign him?
Well, he's out of Europe, and they haven't signed him to a contract, so I believe that they get his rights until 20. I think it isn't it 23. No matter, because he was selected by the Kamloops Blazers in the import draft, but that was after he was.
But that's already, after he was drafted by the NHL,
right? So he's not subject to the CHL transfer agreement, correct. And then all of the European rights, you know, it's fuzzy.
Yeah, you know? It just, like, I can't get my head around it, because it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, this is a guy, you figure that this is a guy who, you know, a lot of scouts when they first saw him, kind of like Norrod, same thing, you know, one of the things that I read a lot was, this is a guy with a game meant for North America. Why would you want to send him back to Europe?
I don't know if I would quite say that with Balcers, you know, with what we saw in the WHL and, you know, later.
I mean,
that's
what I read when he was drafted repeatedly. Right. Like, this is a guy who's a game styled for North America.
Yeah. One way or another, he's a sniper. I mean, he is a goal scorer. He had 40 goals for the Blazers. He's got a nose for the net. He's got a great shot. You know, putting him, you know, inserting him with a Danny O'Regan when you're yo-yoing Timo Meier and Marcus Sorensen and Kevin LeBanc. And, you know, that's the kind of thinking. Like, let's say injuries happen in the playoffs, and all of a sudden Meier is gone. You know, right. Being able to plug in a Rudolph Balcers, you know, at least mitigates that for the Barracuda. And let's not kid ourselves. That's the Barracuda's job, is to reinforce the Sharks. But the more they play and the more meaningful games they play, that helps their development.
Correct.
Other teams, you know, there's still scouts coming to AHL games looking at guys that they might want, you know, to trade for, or pieces in trades. you know, the longer this team plays, the more experience they get, the higher value some of their prospects, you know, as trade chips, you know, looking at this organizationally. It would just be beneficial up and down the organization, not even talking about the experience he would get, getting used to the professional game, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Even Rudolph Balkers is like, hey, we're going to trade you with something else to get something else.
Right.
Is beneficial by him reporting to the San Jose Barracuda. So literally there, I don't see the downside.
Yeah, no, and that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I get you don't have to sign him right now, but it's not like they're hugging up against the contract limit. They're not. Like, I don't get the logic behind it.
And not just that, you know, look at the high-end game-breaking talent, you know, that the team has.
Oh, I have an excellent question for you in the chat. From Cheryl, how do you know what scouts are in attendance?
I do. There's a seating chart at every hockey game you go to. Well, I shouldn't say every. The vast majority of hockey games you go to, there's going to be a seating chart with assigned seating. When you go to the CHL, so that would be the QMJHL, the WHL, and the OHL, the nomenclature is you look for the men in dark coats.
Yeah.
What they'll do is they'll have they'll be in dark coats. They'll be like a tiny little team logo. They'll have, you know, a lot of papers. They walk around like this. They drink a lot of coffee. They're talking to other men in dark coats, and it's just one of those things. When I was actually up in Spokane on my WHL trip, there was 17 scouts that all came to talk to Kaylor Yamamoto, Jared Anderson Dolan, and they were conducting the interviews after the game. So I had to wait almost an hour to talk to the guys I wanted to talk to because they were all going through. And Joachim Blichfeld, you know, when I talked to him, you know, mentioned kind of all the men in dark coats coming through for Cody Glass and Henry Yokoharu down there and with Portland. So they're pretty easy to spot. But
they, like, and like Zach said too, they generally have some team insignia on them.
Yeah.
So that's generally, you know, but the seating chart will also tell you who's who, basically.
And then Vince says, open to public or credentials required to view? So most practices are open to the public. Occasionally teams will shut it down. Most of the scouts come for games, though. You might get some interviews after practices and like the Stockton Heat, I've got a good relationship with those guys over there, so they'll let me kind of dip into their practice, get some viewings on some of their AHL guys, and if I'm doing any feature pieces or things like that, they'll let me chat after practice. But most of it is game related.
And one last question here, because I know Mr. Kuda Phil asked a question and it just kind of got scrolled down. Okay. What if Jones got signed by another team? Okay. I think Jones is still under contract for what? Two more years? One more year?
One more year.
Would we see a Groznik Dell combo? That would be a disaster. I love them both. I'm not convinced that Groznik has much NHL upside. That's my personal opinion. And Dell is sure as hell not a starter.
Goalies are the darkest of dark arts, my friend. Be careful when you dabble in their forecasting. No, Cheryl, I did not get hit in the head with any sticks. That would be Roy Salmer. but actually, no, it was interesting. I thought for sure after that blow up in the Stockton game, and for those that didn't watch the game, there was a fracas at the partition. And Roy Salmer, you know, he's an emotional guy. And was getting into it with the Stockton bench. And Brendan Bolick just kind of reached over and took a swipe with his stick at Roy Salmer. And if he wasn't upset before, he was, it turned into a full-on Donnybrook at that point. And Salmer after the game kind of joked that it was just a glancing blow at best, so.
Yeah. how dark is your coat, Zach?
Black, always black.
Always black. There you go. How many AHL pims does Storky have? A bunch. I don't have it in front of me.
Stortini, 116. Oof. I mean, he's not Alex Gallant at 126.
That's true.
Yeah, I tweeted out during the Ontario game, if anyone had Alex Gallant or Paul Bissonnette in their AHL fantasy hockey league, they won the PIMS department that night, and Biznasty actually liked that. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right, guys. We've gone pretty long as we normally do. So
standard.
Standard. You know, look at, just expect an hour and a half show at this point. We're never gonna trim it down. Hour and a half minimum. I try to be conscientious. You'll be able to find the show on the Tealtown USA audio stream, and regardless of what happens next, there's been talks. Fences are trying to be mended. This show could very well be on the other channel going forward, but I'm not making any promises until that is settled officially. Yes, Reed Duke got friends. That's right. He got loaned.
Yeah, he's with Chicago, right? Chicago Wolves.
Chicago Wolves. Yes, people play soccer with now. I feel good for the guy. Look, guys, I'm planning. You know, I want to do this on a weekly basis. Like I said, going to be a little more rotating with the hosts. I know Kevin has a lot of stuff going on, but again, you know, people are welcome. We're gonna obviously have cool conversations with cool people about cool hockey stuff. I mean, there's so much cool stuff coming up. We got the playoffs coming up, with the expansion drafts coming up, and they're going to release all that information, and I can't wait. You know, the draft, free agency. I mean, we're gonna do it all, and then we'll just find things to randomly talk about in the summer when I can track people down. So I hope you like the new revamped Tilt into Glasses 2.0. And, you know, thanks for watching again, and thanks for all your support. I'll never be able to put into words how touched I am that when stuff kind of goes wrong, how many of you are there to pick me back up. So before I get all misty-eyed, we're out of here. Good night.